Hi, and welcome to the Magazine Rack on Chris. I'm Emily. Today, I'll continue reading from the May 2024 edition of Prevention Magazine. Let's pick up where we left off with an article from the In Focus section titled, Everyday Eye Fixes. An important part of taking care of your peepers is knowing what to do when they're giving you trouble. Here's how to handle common eye problems so you'll be able to see clearly for years to come. Allergies. When it's allergy season, or too many dust bunnies are hanging around your house, your eyes may become an annoying, irritated mess. Here are some eye-related allergy symptoms. White stringing discharge, typically affect both eyes at the same time, include redness, swelling, or watering, or intense itchiness or burning, develop while spending time outdoors or after having the windows open. What to do? Step 1 is to start taking your preventative or controller meds early. For spring, that's around March, while August is a good time for fall allergy season, says Purvi Parikh, MD, an allergist at Allergy and Asthma Network. Wear glasses or sunglasses to help shield your eyes from pollen and other allergens when spending time outdoors, and change clothes, and ideally shower, as soon as you come inside. Keeping windows closed on high pollen days and running an air purifier that's certified asthma and allergy friendly by the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America can also help. Using eye drops may soothe discomfort. If nothing seems to do the trick, an allergist may recommend allergy shots to help desensitize you to allergens over time, Dr. Parikh adds. Eye infections. If bacteria get into your eyes or your eyes are exposed to a virus, often through respiratory droplets, that can cause an eye infection and trigger icky symptoms such as redness, itching, swelling, sensitivity to bright lights, pus or mucousy discharge that can be yellow, green, or white, eyes crusted together, especially upon waking, pain or difficulty seeing. What to do? First, see a doctor to figure out if the problem is bacteria or virus-induced. For bacterial infections, you may need prescription antibiotic drops. Smart moves to prevent eye infections from becoming a regular thing include tossing old eye makeup and replacing eyeliner and mascara every 3 months to keep it from harboring germs. Always insert contact lenses with clean hands, and don't sleep in them. Also, wash your hands frequently and try to avoid touching your eyes in general. Digital eye strain. Do you spend all day staring at a computer screen or your phone? If so, you're probably familiar with the effects of digital eye strain, such as dry or red eyes, blurry vision, non-eye-related symptoms such as headache and neck or back pain. What to do? Blinking too little strains your eyes, so put a "remember to blink" sticky note on your laptop where you won't be able to miss it. Follow the 20-20-20 rule throughout the day to relax and rewet your eyes. Every 20 minutes, look 20 feet ahead of you, away from the screen, for 20 seconds. Try matching screen brightness to ambient light. Position your laptop or phone so you're looking slightly down at it rather than up directly at the screen. This promotes eye relaxation, better blinking, and less tear evaporation, explains Annie Nguyen, MD, an assistant professor of clinical ophthalmology at the University of Southern California Roeske Eye Institute. Dry eye. Yes, it's true that dry eye is a symptom of many eye-related issues, but when your eyes lack essential components such as water, mucus, and oil, it can also be a problem on its own, says Ahmed Omar, MD, co-director of the Dry Eye Center at University Hospitals Eye Institute in Cleveland. You may experience sensations such as dryness, grittiness, blurry vision. What to do? First, avoid exposure to things that make it harder for eyes to produce tears, thereby triggering dry eye. These include excessive screen time without breaks, blowing air, and airborne irritants. Over-the-counter artificial tears may help lubricate and soothe dry eyes. To ease your discomfort, try laying a clean washcloth soaked in warm water on your eyes or wearing a heated eye mask twice a day for 10 minutes. Question: should I be worried about those dots, specks, and lines that dart in front of my eyes like little bugs? Answer: They're called floaters, and more often than not, they're harmless, says Melissa Barnett, OD, director of optometry at UC Davis in California. The inside of the eye contains the vitreous humor, a normal clear jelly-like gel. When we get older, it begins to liquefy, and pieces of undissolved gel particles float in the eye and cast a shadow on the retina, causing the floaters, Dr. Barnett explains. Floaters tend to move or disappear when you blink and are often more obvious when you're looking at a blue sky, a white background, or a computer screen. They normally come and go. The time to worry is if you see hundreds of floaters or quick, bright flashes of light, or if it seems as if your vision is obscured by a curtain or shade that's not actually there. In this case, see your doctor immediately for a retinal evaluation and a dilated eye examination to determine whether something more serious, such as a retinal tear or detachment, is to blame, says Dr. Barnett. Strange symptoms explained. Redness, swelling, and discomfort in the white part of your eye. This could be episcleritis, a condition whose cause is often unknown that can be relieved with artificial tears, cold compresses, and oral non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs such as ibuprofen, says Emily Sheedlin, MD, a glaucoma and cataract surgeon at Brighton Vision Center in Brighton, Michigan. Persistent cases may require a short course of steroid drops. If episcleritis recurs frequently, it may be related to an autoimmune condition or an infection. Blurry or wavy vision. Sometimes a thin film of fibrous tissue called an epiretinal membrane forms on the back of the retina, causing straight lines to look wavy. The only treatment is surgery to remove the tissue. It's a delicate surgery, basically like peeling a piece of plastic wrap off the retina, says Robert Lackney, MD, an ophthalmologist in private practice in New York City. What to know about eye drop recalls. Last year, quite a few batches of eye drops were recalled due to potential bacterial contamination or unsanitary conditions that violated manufacturing standards. Eye drops are one product for which you should always pay attention to a recall. Because they can penetrate the eye's natural defense, given that they're put directly into the eyes, problems with them could lead to heightened risk of an infection. It's important that people immediately stop using recalled eye drop brands. Risk of contaminated eye drops range from minimal irritation to severe effects such as vision loss or cornea scarring, says Brian Boxer-Walchler, MD, an ophthalmologist and a medical reviewer at All About Vision. Take these steps when you hear of an eye drop recall. 1. Stop using and throw out any affected eye drop products. 2. If you use eye drops but are unsure whether yours are included in a recall, call your eye doctor to find out. 3. Contact lens wearers may want to check with their eye doctor to see if the contacts they've worn should be tested so as to better tailor potential treatment to them. 4. Report eye irritation or infection caused by effective drops to the FDA's MedWatch Adverse Event Reporting Program at fda.gov. Our next article is titled, When Eye Problems Get Serious, by Stacy Colino. These are the issues for which you're going to need a doctor and might even require surgery, but don't stress. Just get your eye exams and learn what to look for. Cataracts. What's going on here? The lens in the eye is clear when we're young, but over time it becomes cloudy and stiff, notes Dr. Sheelan. Both of these changes can decrease the quality of your vision. You may also experience glare, trouble reading or seeing into the distance, or difficulty driving at night. Could this happen to you? Getting older is the biggest contributing factor, but other risk factors include having an eye injury, a family history of cataracts, lots of exposure to UV light, or a chronic medical condition like diabetes, frequently using medications such as corticosteroids, and smoking. A dilated eye exam will spot them, and your doctor will advise you as to how often you should have eye exams to monitor their progression. What you can do. No one can completely prevent cataracts, but you can slow their progression by protecting your eyes from the sun, Dr. Sheelan says. That means wearing sunglasses that block 100% of UV rays, as well as wearing a hat. And cataracts may not need to be treated at all if they're not compromising your vision. A change in your eyeglasses prescription may be all that's needed. For more significant vision changes, surgery can be performed to remove the cloudy lens and put in an artificial one during a brief outpatient procedure. Afterward, your doctor will prescribe eye drops to prevent inflammation and infection, says Alice Lork, MD, MPH, an assistant professor of ophthalmology at Mass Eye and Ear and Harvard Medical School. Age-related macular degeneration. What's going on here? This condition, with a mouthful of a name, is also referred to as AMD, and it occurs when the macula, a small area in the center of the retina, is damaged, often simply due to the aging process. There are actually two types of AMD, dry and wet. In the dry version, which is much more common, tiny deposits called drusen grow in the macula, affecting vision. With the wet version, abnormal new blood vessels from under the retina can leak blood into the eye, explains Dr. Lorch. The dry form sometimes, though, not always, progresses to the wet form. You can also have a different form in each eye. Could this happen to you? The primary risk factors are being over 50, smoking, obesity, having a family history of AMD, and having significant UV light exposure. The other risk factors include atherosclerosis, hypertension, and cholesterol abnormalities. Both types of AMD can be discovered during a dilated eye exam or with an optical coherence tomography, OCT, scan, which produces a high-resolution cross-sectional image of the retina so an ophthalmologist can see each layer of the eye, explains Purnima S. Patel, MD, a clinical spokesperson for the American Academy of Ophthalmology, a retina specialist, and founder of Aura Vision in Atlanta. This can detect early forms of the disease as well as its progression. What you can do. There's currently no cure for either form of AMD, but there are ways to keep it in check. Dry and wet AMD are treated with nutritional supplements called AREDs that contain high doses of antioxidants, specifically vitamins C and E, beta-carotene, zinc, and copper. A recent review from the UK confirmed that people with AMD who take these supplements are less likely to have the disease progress. These formulas are widely available and no prescription is needed, says Marguerite McDonald, MD, a clinical professor of ophthalmology at NYU Langone Medical Center and Tulane University Medical School in New Orleans. For those with dry AMD who have what's called geographic atrophy, an advanced form of dry AMD, there's some good news. In 2023, two new injectable drugs to slow down the atrophy, which can help preserve vision, gained FDA approval. Wet AMD is treated with anti-VEGF, vascular endothelial growth factor, drugs that are injected into the eye after it is numbed to prevent a growth of abnormal blood vessels and stop progression. Treating it on the sooner side leads to better outcomes, Dr. Lorch says. Glaucoma. What's going on here? While there are different types of glaucoma, the common denominator is damage to the optic nerve, usually due to elevated eye pressure, explains Robert Lackney, MD, an ophthalmologist in private practice in New York City. The pressure usually results from fluid building up in the eye, often because of a blockage or another problem with the eye's drainage system. But because there are no early signs, glaucoma is often called the silent thief of sight, says Dr. Sheelan. Could this happen to you? Having a family history of glaucoma is a risk factor, as is being over 60, having increased eye pressure or thin corneas, being African American or Hispanic, using steroid medications long term, and having a history of severe eye injury. Nearsightedness, myopia, and the presence of certain medical conditions like diabetes and high blood pressure may also be associated with glaucoma. A recent study from South Korea suggests that people 40 and older who have chronic and severe migraines have a greater risk of developing open-angle glaucoma. Fortunately, glaucoma can be detected with a comprehensive eye exam that includes measuring pressure in the eye, examining the optic nerve for damage, and inspecting the eye's drainage angle as well as testing vision. What you can do. Once diagnosed, Glaucoma can often be controlled with eye drops to lower the pressure and protect the nerves, Dr. McDonald says. Also, there are two types of in-office laser surgery that allow fluid to drain from the eye so pressure stays low, and there are surgical approaches that can be very helpful as well. Unfortunately, as of now, damage from glaucoma can't be reversed, but medicine and surgery can prevent further damage. Because glaucoma is symptom-free until it's very advanced, having annual eye exams is essential. Diabetic retinopathy. What's going on here? With this condition, blood vessels in the retina leak fluid or bleed, distorting vision. People with diabetes can have elevated blood sugar levels that cause blockages or damage in blood vessels in the retina, Dr. Lockney explains. These blood vessels can wreak havoc in the back of the eye, leading to scarring. If the scars cause the retina to pull away from the back of the eye, this is called retinal detachment, and it's a medical emergency because if not treated promptly, it could lead to permanent vision loss. Could this happen to you? A significant number of people are at risk for diabetic retinopathy, given that more than 38 million people in the U.S. currently have diabetes. It can happen with type 1 or type 2 diabetes, Dr. Lorch says. And the longer people have diabetes, the more at risk they are. It can be diagnosed through a dilated eye exam, Dr. Patel notes, adding that those with diabetes need an annual eye exam at minimum to detect diabetic retinopathy early. Unfortunately, research shows that only 65% of adults with diabetes had a yearly eye exam in 2022, roughly the same percentage as in 2019. A hidden perk of these exams, the eyes provide a window into the body, allowing doctors to discern other diabetes-related damage that may be occurring. The only place in the body where we can see blood vessels is the eye, explains Dr. Patel. So if we see blood vessel damage in the eye, we can tell that there's damage elsewhere in the body. What you can do. Good management of blood sugar and blood pressure are the mainstays of treatment for diabetic retinopathy. In some instances, this may even improve vision. Depending on the severity of the disease, anti-VEGF infections can reduce inflammation, stop progression of the problem, and improve vision, Dr. Lockney says. Moving on to our next article, which is from the Wellness section of Prevention Magazine, titled, 5 Myths About Eating Disorders. Made for TV movies can distort the reality of these sometimes fatal conditions. Here's a few things to unlearn and the facts to set you straight, by Katie Rockwood. Number 1. Myth. Eating disorders are all about food and weight. Mythbuster. It may look that way on the surface, but behaviors such as binging, purging, and restricting food are coping mechanisms to control or manage difficult feelings and to experience some relief from them, says Elizabeth Altakarna, LMSW, Director of Education for the National Eating Disorder Association. People with these biopsychosocial illnesses, which include binge eating disorder, bulimia nervosa, and anorexia nervosa, develop preoccupations with food and weight in response to a past or present risk factors such as low self-esteem, bullying, or trauma, and a family background of eating disorders, she adds. Many of those with an eating disorder also have another mental health issue such as anxiety, depression, OCD, or substance use disorder. All this means that addressing disordered eating behavior is an important part of recovery, but not the only thing needed. Myth number 2. People with eating disorders never get better. Mythbuster. Full recovery from an eating disorder is possible, says Rachel Hartley, a registered dietitian and nutrition therapist, as well as an intuitive eating expert. Many people go on to have a healthy and pleasurable relationship with food and their bodies, but the recovery journey can require ongoing attention throughout someone's life, just as when people with anxiety or depression have ups and downs, she says. In the long term, up to 2/3 of people with bulimia, anorexia, or binge eating disorder recover. Others recover partially, seeing relief from some of their symptoms. The most effective treatment for an eating disorder is one that is very individualized, involving medications, therapy, or nutritional counseling. Myth number 3. Loving, well-intentioned comments really help. Mythbuster. Telling someone with an eating disorder that they look fine or urging them to just eat a little doesn't do much. Eating disorders are complex conditions that someone can't simply be talked out of, says Sarah Herstich, MSW, a body image and eating disorder therapist and the founder of Reclaim Therapy. And they aren't a choice. Between 28 and 84% of eating disorder risk is inherited. The best thing you can do is help the person get professional treatment. Eating disorders can cause long-lasting damage and be fatal. Anorexia, in fact, is the deadliest of all mental illnesses. Telling a loved one what they mean to you, asking what they need, including them in social activities, and listening without criticism are all good ways to offer support. Myth number 4. Someone who is heavy can't have anorexia. Mythbuster. People of any size can have it, and many with the disease are not medically underweight, research shows. Body weight is one diagnostic factor, but doctors also consider the person's thoughts. A strong fear of weight gain is one indication, and behaviors such as restricting food, overexercising, and abusing diet pills. People with anorexia are not usually emaciated, Hartley says. Bodies naturally exist in a wide range of sizes, and because many people don't necessarily lose significant weight in response to restriction, it's impossible to visually tell who is struggling with anorexia. Also, someone may eat in a troublingly disordered way, but not technically have an eating disorder. The bottom line. All people need to know that whether or not they fit in the diagnostic criteria, they are deserving of treatment to heal from disordered eating patterns and rebuild connection to and trust in their bodies, Herstich says. Myth number 5. Eating disorders are a teenager thing. Mythbuster. Research on eating disorders most commonly focuses on those in their teen years, but people of all ages have them, and they are extremely common in adulthood, says Herstich. Bulimia nervosa, for instance, is slightly more prevalent among middle-aged adults than among young adults, and 11% of cases of anorexia, 17% of cases of bulimia, and nearly 30% of cases of binge eating disorder develop after age 25. Adults are especially vulnerable to developing eating disorders during times of stress or when major developments such as pregnancy and menopause occur, says dietitian Hartley. And disordered eating and body image issues often start in childhood. Research shows that 40% to 60% of elementary school girls are worried about their weight. Eating disorders at any age are an indication of suffering. Whether the behaviors were developed in response to trauma or societal pressures, or continued into adulthood starting from the teenage years, Herstich says. Our next article from the wellness section is titled, Beauty. Look great when you travel. Get in those vacation pictures. Here's a beauty pro's guide to confidence by Bobby Brown. Bobby Brown is a makeup artist and the founder of Jones Rhodes Beauty and Bobby Brown Cosmetics. After decades of traveling for store openings and speaking engagements, there are a few things I do on every flight. I wear minimal makeup, have my hair in a ponytail, and keep my beauty essentials in my carry-on. These include something to keep my lips from drying out during the flight. The Lippy Stick, $22 on JonesRoadBeauty.com, along with a blushy shade of Miracle Balm, $38 on JonesRoadBeauty.com. When we're about to land, I apply some to my cheeks to bring back a bit of the color we tend to lose with age and make me look better under the harsh airport lights. Even though I own a beauty brand, paring down my products is something I've been working on all my life. Here's what I figured out so far. Bring hydrators. Air conditioning and changing temperatures can lead to parched skin, whatever your mode of transportation. I drink plenty of water and keep moisturizers for my face, hands, cuticles, and lips close by. If I have room, I bring an eye cream to plump my delicate under-eye skin. If there isn't a mini version available, I DIY it using a small container from a drugstore. Use hardworking products. I put skincare in one bag and makeup in another. Separating the two keeps me organized while I'm away. Bringing fewer products also helps. I pack one tiny mascara, mini brushes, and an eyeshadow palette with four neutral shades. When one tries new cuisines and operates on a different schedule than usual, Pimples may pop up, so I bring a concealer to cover spots. I use the Face Pencil, $25 on JonesRoadBeauty.com to hide discoloration. Packing dual-purpose products helps save space too. Along with the Miracle Balm, I pack a brown pencil to fill in my brows and line my eyes. Try solid skincare. Don't let the TSA get in the way of a clean complexion. Opt for bars and sticks instead of liquids. These will make it through security and also let you avoid spills in your bag. Make sure solid skincare formulas contain hydrators like seed oils and squalene to nourish and help them glide on easily. The cleansing stick, $34 on JonesRoadBeauty.com, is great for travel as it dissolves makeup and cleanses without stripping skin. Harmful UV rays don't take vacation days, so I always bring a glow stick SPF 50, $30 on Supergoop.com. Have fun! Vacation is the perfect time to play with makeup. Bring that bright color blush or sparkly eyeshadow to try. You may need to make space, but if you pack wisely, you'll have room. And our last article for today is titled Fitness, Work, Rest, Repeat, Your Expert Guide to Interval Training and a Workout You Can Try Today by Allie Early. The best workout you can do is actually one that doesn't take a lot of time. Interval training will get your heart pumping and burn calories in as little as 15 minutes. This type of workout alternates between periods of work and periods of rest, and it's really good for you. It builds an aerobic capacity, meaning it increases the maximum amount of oxygen your body can use, which is gold for your heart and brain health. It also increases and preserves muscle mass and promotes fat loss. How does it work? There are two primary types of interval training: HIIT, high-intensity interval training, and LIIT, low-intensity interval training, explains Ebenezer Samuel, CSCS, a Prevention's Fellow Health brand, Men's Health. HIIT workouts involve high strain for a short time, followed by a long recovery period. For instance, you might push yourself hard in an exercise for 15 seconds, then rest for 45 seconds. That's a 1-to-3 ratio. Some workouts call for a 1-to-2 or 1-to-4 ratio. By the end, you should be asking yourself if you can do this, Samuel says. Then there's LIIT, which flips the work-rest ratio, so you're spending more time working out and less time resting. With LIIT, you often do the same kinds of exercises you do with HIIT, but the goal is not to reach your absolute max effort. That makes LIIT a bit more accessible and a good way to try out on-off sequence of interval training, and it's still a very effective way to work out. For LIIT, you might do a 2-to-1 workout to rest ratio, with 40 seconds of workout and 20 seconds of rest. Let's get moving. Samuel suggests trying low-intensity interval training 2 times per week with this workout. 15-minute LIIT for beginners. Grab a 5-to-15-pound dumbbell or kettlebell and a timer or round-counting app like Interval Timer. You'll do each of these moves for 40 seconds, then rest for 20 seconds before moving to the next one. After you finish all 5, rest for 20 seconds and start at the top again. Complete 3 total rounds. Number 1. Offset load marches, right side. March for 40 seconds, holding the weight at your right side. Number 2. Offset load marches, left side. March for 40 seconds, holding the weight at your left side. Number 3. Glute bridges. Lie flat on your back, knees bent, feet on the floor. Position your feet about 8 inches from your glutes, shoulder width apart. Raise your hips, hold, then lower back down. Continue for 40 seconds. Number 4. Bird dogs. Start on your hands and knees. Raise one arm out in front of you and the opposite leg out behind you. Return to your hands and knees. Raise the opposite arm and the opposite leg, alternating slowly for 40 seconds. Number 5. Plank shoulder taps. Assume a push-up position, a plank pose with your hands positioned under your shoulders, toes on the floor. Lift one hand to tap the opposite shoulder. Place your hand back on the floor. Repeat, alternating sides, for 40 seconds. That's it for this installment of the Magazine Rack. I've been reading from the May 2024 edition of Prevention Magazine. I'm Emily. So long until next time.